So you know how I love to highlight the cultural significance of dogs in our podcast. Well, that's why we're jumping online now to talk to Barry Stebbing about his first novel that was inspired by an amazing painting. I'm Anna Webb. Welcome to A Dog's Life. Barry Stebbing, welcome to A Dog's Life.
Thank you.
Oh, I am so thrilled to have read your book, which fascinates me on so many levels. So what I have to do is contain my excitement in talking about this, because this book called Cedric is actually your very first novel, right?
Right. But it's to clarify, Cedric and the subtitle is Footprints in the Sand. And that should be connected because there's a lot of Cedrics out there.
Oh, yes, I'm sure there are actually. But yes, the footprints in the sand. Gosh, I mean, that really, for me, defines the whole book. I mean, I don't want to give away any spoilers here, of course, you know, but it's quite a, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, a symbolic phrase, footprints in the sand. I mean, that can mean so many different things, right?
Yeah, and Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, who was the poet laureate of the Victorian era, I took a part of his poem and put it right at the end of the book, as you probably saw, which is so appropriate.
Yes, but you use so many references in this book that focuses on the Victorian era. I mean, whilst the story centralizes on, of course, a dog, or you wouldn't be on this podcast, Barry. but you've brought to life a painting that was painted by Sir Edwin Landseer. Back when was it exactly painted? 1835 time?
I think it was 1831.
Right. Okay. So a very long time ago. It was actually a painting that actually got destroyed in a flood at the Tate Museum way back in the 1920s. And I do remember seeing it. Obviously, I wasn't born in the 1920s, but I remember this being a big deal for this painting to be restored. And it was showcased for the first time at the Kennel Club in Mayfair in London. And I went along to see the painting, which is of a black and white a Newfoundland called Bob. Now you take it from there.
Well, yes, it I've been a mentor of art history for many years, and I was kind of studying great animal artists, and of course there's Anton Mauve, who did the Shepherd with the Sheep from Holland, and there's the wonderful French woman, Rosa Bonheur, who was she was a favorite of Queen Victoria. She exhibited, I think, one of her paintings in the palace. But her most favorite was Sir Edwin Landseer, and he was knighted, I think, in 1891. I mean, 1851. And he was her favorite. He came to the palace and did portraits of many of her pets, her three terriers, and I don't know about the Shetland ponies and what have you. So I see this painting, and I think you have chapter one on tape. I had almost completed the story, and I said, wait, this would be a great intro for the story. So I put that in, and I don't know if you can play that. We have an excellent narrator, a Brit named Christopher Kendrick, and who's done a tremendous job in the audiobook. And so if we can we listen to chapter one? It's just about a minute.
Yes.
Chapter one, A Tale to Tell. As patrons make their way through the Tate Museum, strolling past a vast display of Turner and Gainsborough masterpieces, they arrive within other spacious rooms with works from the Victorian era, paintings redolent of the chivalrous days of yore, along with the colourful prose of the Pre-Raphaelites. Amid this collection is a rather large painting of a Newfoundland dog. Set within a backdrop of sea and gulls, he stares at the viewer with a rosy pink tongue. The picture allows one's imagination to wander, Who is he? And what is he doing here? The title does offer a clue. Bob, a distinguished member of the Humane Society. It was painted in the early 1800s by the English master Sir Edwin Henry Landseer. Delving through the archives, we obtain more insight. The dog had been a survivor of a shipwreck on the Thames River. He had drifted to the docks of a village and made the pier his home for the remainder of his life. Throughout the ensuing years, this remarkable creature would dive into the tumultuous waters and rescue 23 souls from other shipwrecks. So, let us commence from here, filling in many blanks with our creative touch. The name of our noble creature will be Cedric. We will begin by following his footsteps in the sand as he somberly makes his way into the coastal village of Sheppey, next to the estuary of the Thames.
What I love is about the emotion that really gets embedded into the book very, very, very quickly. You could say you paint a very vivid picture with words.
Thank you. That's a Van Gogh compliment.
Oh, no, but it's absolutely true. You know, the detail in the book, I mean, I could go on and on, you know, in terms of the characters as well, because, you know, the book centralizes around the Newfoundland called Bob, and you bring his story, which nobody really knows that much about. You know, he was painted. There's a legend around him that he saved over 20 people from drowning in the sea in an era when we didn't have aeroplanes. So people had to get from A to B most of the time on the sea, and the boats were quite fragile in comparison to these days. And lots of people died at sea, didn't they, Barry? I mean, it was kind of a known thing. It would be on the news quite often that another boat had sunk in the treacherous seas.
Yes, and it's the estuary where the Thames meets the channel, where and the sandbars where most of these ships went down. And of course, there were battles in and out of the centuries too. But I think graveyard of over 7 vessels right there. And so we took Cedric, alias Bob, and we moved him from the docks of London to a fictitious village called Sheppey, which is right next to the estuary, and that's where the action takes place, where in actuality Bob did his rescues on the Thames River.
Yes, yeah. And indeed, you know, caused quite a stir at a time when, you know, you look back at people's lives then. I mean, gosh, in a way, I wish I was there. You know, I find life today is so driven by technology and is so different from life back in the Victorian times, maybe for good, maybe for not so good. But the one common denominator, I think, in all of this is, of course, the dog. And I love your narrator when he uses his voice to say the dog looked out blankly across the Atlantic. But it was a dog. But dogs are still dogs. Am I making any sense here at all, Barry?
Yeah, you're making all the sense in the world. You really are. You're giving your intake with passion too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so you've brought this to life, because it's true that Cedric did save over 20 humans, but there's very
23.
Little. 23 humans from vicious, very dangerous seas, and bravely swam out there using his webbed feet that are signatory of the Newfoundland, his massive paws to just, you know, battle through fearlessly and do his job. You know, he felt he had this purpose that you brought to life, because his master was sadly drowned on their way over from America to England. And no one really knows what his master was planning to do over here. Sadly, he never got here. So there's so much to think about in the book, you know, people's expectations, people's disappointments, you know, chance meetings. And you paint a picture of the life in those days, which sounded great fun, actually. I'd quite like to go and live in Sheppey in 1835.
Well, I've been a painter and artist my entire life, behind an easel, and the thought process and the solitude. And now, in this latter stage, the chickens have come home to roost, so to say. Where I really feel my calling is writing. My father was a poet. He wrote many of his poems in a concentration camp in Germany during World War II. And my last name is Stebbing. And there's a village just north of London with our name Stebbing. And every Stebbing in the world I'm related to. And I have a uncle, Henry Stebbing, who is on a plaque in the Westminster Cathedral.
Wow.
As a great orator. And I do believe there's an Andy Stebbing who was one of the producers of The Crown, and I think he's a far distant cousin. So I have that inherent trait of writing in me. It's just now it's really starting to bloom. And I will tell you, the journey in painting, silently behind it, and I could get into Landseer doing this painting silently. By the way, his model was, because we don't know what happened to Bob, he plucked this beautiful Landseer, what we call a Landseer, Newfoundland, off the boulevards of London, who was walking with his master named Paul Fry. And with the black and white markings, and he used him for a model. But I can just imagine being a painting, the rapport that went on between the two as he was doing the painting. And what I'm trying to say is that writing just takes your mind into an incredible place. It's a wonderful place to settle your mind and your thoughts and to wander. So I love this venture.
Yes, well, you can tell actually in the writing, you know, you must have really kind of become friends with some of the characters. I mean, namely, of course, Pinky. And I just think the name Pinky, which becomes revealed as to why, won't give away spoilers, but that's sort of such a kind of funny, it's in England, I'm sure in America as well, people can be given some quite quirky nicknames, you know. And so Pinky was obviously this nickname and it suited him well. And he was the first person to see Bob on the edge of this ramshackle pier that had taken a beating in this one particular massive storm, and thereafter really took care of him. But yeah, it's interesting because we don't even know if the original Bob came from America or not, do we?
Well, really, the ship launched from Norway. It was a Norwegian vessel where it came from. And where we give little tidbits that he near the mountains and a beautiful family, and that's what we give. But I believe my characters are somewhat Dickens-like, and I believe that I inherited from my father that poetic sense that I write with a sense of verse. We live on a farm, and I spend, I go out to before the break of day while it's still dark and build a campfire, and I sit there under the stars, and I wait for the first break of light, which is very soft, to come across my pad and my pen, and I'm able to start writing. And it's the most golden moment of the day. But that's where I find most of my inspiration. And journaling for years has taught me this sense of verse to put into my work. And hopefully that's what the reader is gathering.
Well, it's certainly very much an emotional roller coaster. And it really highlights, I think, just normal human condition emotions and rites of passage, you know, and all these things, but in a very simplistic way. But it also really credits this dog, Bob Cedric, and his knighthood. Now, is that fiction or fact? Or do you not want to reveal that?
Look, I just took a hold of this and let it fly. And I think it really took off on its own with a flurry. Now, that is definitely fiction. But it is if you go into the archives, you can knight a dog. So we'll leave it at that.
Well, I'm sure Queen Victoria would have loved to have done it, you know, because I mean, the one thing for sure, she loved dogs, you know, she really loved dogs. And was really instrumental, really, back then in developing so many different breeds of dogs in her long reign, you know.
But he is so incomplete that it was open-ended, and you know, certainly it makes you think that he was such a heroic dog, and you know, throughout the ages, there have been innumerable heroic dogs in their acts towards mankind that we know not of. And I believe Bob is being resurrected. I think he, I mean, he received some acclaim, but there's certainly, you know, an incomplete sentence there. And I look at him as a really great unsung hero.
Yes, definitely, without doubt. I mean, I suppose the records must be there, you know, in terms of his 23 humans that he saved, and they were documented, weren't they, from actual boats that sank?
I can't find anything on that, but I'll tell you what, I went with that with a flurry too. And it's such a great place to let the mind travel and to actually, well, you know, I have a great dog here on our farm. We call him Hoti, Hohty. He's and he has taught me so much about Cedric. But Cedric is just you learn about him, and you try to put yourself into his paws and what it's like to jump off the pier, and every time was in a tempest and against the waves, and it, you right come right on the borderline of being unbelievable, but then it's not, because I don't know if you know, but it's I think it's well documented that Napoleon, when he was escaping Elba, he fell from the ship and a Newfoundland rescued him.
Yeah,
So
totally. No, they're known for it. I mean, they were bred originally, you know, in Newfoundland to help fishermen, you know, and if they got into trouble, they'd pull the boats in, or, you know, they were life-saving dogs. And there was a Newfoundland. I met him. I'm not sure if he's still with us, a good few years ago, and he lived in Cornwall, and he was part of the life-saving team on the beach. And he did actually do it, go out, swim out, and help people that got into trouble swimming just down in Cornwall. And he was named Bob, obviously after this painting. So they do have the capacity naturally to do it, like a border collie might round up sheep without being trained. There is this instinct apparently in the Newfie. So, and they do have the only webbed feet, and they have much bigger toes than similarly other big dogs. So, like a Saint Bernard is quite similar, but they don't have the webbed feet and these extra long toes to enable them to paddle. So that's interesting. I think. Anyway, I'm a dog nerd, you know, but tell us more about your own dog and what he would do, you know, when you were writing. Would he just sit beside you or try and distract you?
He doesn't necessarily come next to me while I'm writing, and he doesn't like the campfire. But yeah, I have found this is the first dog. I'll be 78 this summer, and very healthy, by the way. But this is the first dog that I've aged with. He's nearly 12, and I've never gone through this season of a dog's life before, but it's very endearing. This is where a special bonding takes place, and he becomes the love is so rich and pure, and he is so dependent. And so I bring him in every morning. He sleeps in a doghouse set on the kitchen porch, overlooking the pond. I bring him in, I lay on the sofa, and he lays next to me, and I pet him. And it is it is such a work in progress. I marvel at it because it's such soothing therapy for me and such soothing therapy for him. And it is such a pleasure to have him as a best friend. I play international chess on the internet, and I play a lot of Brits and, you know, distinguished men and professionals. And we all take an image as our logo to post up there with us. And invariably, over 50% of the men put a picture of their dog. Not their wife or their children or their grandchildren, but their dog. And I like what Shakespeare said, and I put this in the story too. I love this. And Shakespeare said in Sonnet 30, but if the while I think on thee, dear friend, all losses are restored, all sorrows end.
Wow. Wow. Yes. Well, this is it. This is what dogs, you know, they say as well, you know, that, you know, losing a dog will break your heart, shatter it. You know, there is no question. And, you know, it's something everyone listening, I'm sure, understands. And then there is this kind of role of other dogs that you will then bring into your life until they heal your heart and you die eventually with the heart of a dog.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in life that are difficult to figure out. So you just go with the seasons and you are thankful for the present day and what you have. And I call him a pup. I tell him he's a pup and he jumps and he's got a lot of pup in him. And dogs are made for farms, not for leashes or walking down the sidewalks. And he just runs out in the meadow. So he gets a full day's exercise and he's very healthy and he's in a happy home. So I think we all have a long life ahead of us.
I hope so. Absolutely. Yeah. Sounds like he's your best friend, which is fabulous. So what other animals do you have on the farm?
Well, you know, Sandra and I are basically city folks. I'm from Baltimore and she's from up in New Jersey. And we happed upon this this farm about 25 years ago. And it took a while to acclimate. But, oh, boy, it's a treasure. And it's the greatest place in the world. Very simple, with the solitude and the peace and the ambiance of nature. Anyway, I always kind of frowned at these cards we would receive from senior citizen women of butterflies and birds. But in these latter years, I've come to really cherish their accents on nature. And I love, and Sandra's out there with the birds and the butterflies every day. And we have a 3-acre pond and we have mallards and Canada geese, and they come up every day for feeding. And we'll have little ducklings pretty soon. We have three free range hens that deposit an egg each day for us on the kitchen porch. And we have a dozen guineas. I don't know if you know what they are, but they're quite animated and they sleep on a tree right outside of our bedroom window. And they kind of serenade us to sleep with their clucking. And that's about it.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Well, and remind me of your dog's name again, because he must love all of these birds everywhere. I hope he doesn't try and eat them.
No, you know, it's very important, very, very important that a dog on a farm is in harmony with the other animals. And if anyone comes to visit us and they have a dog, we say, are they animal friendly? Because if not, they will wreak havoc chasing the hens and the guineas and what have you. So no, he's in total harmony and he's really the king of the farm. He's a protector and watches over everything. He breaks up fights between the male and female guineas, etc.
Yes. Yeah. So you mean guinea fowl? Is that the same thing as a guinea?
Yes. Guinea fowl.
Yeah, because they are quite fierce, aren't they, apparently, in the breeding season. I'm sure I watched an Attenborough program on the guinea fowl, and they really plump up their feathers, and the males can get pretty nasty with each other.
It's kind of comical, really. I mean, if you ever watch cartoon funnies, you see where a lot of these themes in these cartoons, you know, years ago, with Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny and what have you, you see where a lot of these themes came from. You know, the writers had to have lived on a farm. So you see a lot of this humor all the time. And by the way, back to Cedric Footprints in the Sand.
Yes.
My aspiration was to make this a good read, a wholesome read, you know, during this time of doubt and despair, to really settle in the reader's heart and their mind, something good. And this thread, I believe, goes through the entire novel. And again, my objective at the end, at the closing of the book, is that it lingers, that the mind drifts, and it stays in this good place. And, you know, I read Hugo's Les Miserables 20 years ago, and the last 20 pages just had such great impact on me and have stayed with me for a long time. So that's my main aspiration.
I think it's such a brilliant aspiration to have, you know, because I feel people need to read, you know, and, you know, I know the Cedric Footprints in the Sand is on Kindle, isn't it? I think. So that's easy for people, you know, to take it on the go if they don't want to carry a book, but it's not that big. And it's just, I love it as well because it's got small chapters. So you can think, right, I'm just going to do one chapter before I eat my dinner and then another for pudding. You know what I mean? And well, and that way you get through it, that you find the pages are turning. Yeah.
Well, I read this, I read this book about a year and a half ago. And it was by a British author, by the way. And I really liked to read because it was so fluid. And I said, wow, he's got small chapters. So I scrambled through the entire manuscript and I made all the chapters small. And, you know, we have this habit, long chapters are tedious. And many people, including myself, have a habit of you start the chapter and you thumb through how many pages is this chapter. So this reads it's a very easy read and fluent, and the chapters are short.
Yes, and I think that's great. And I can't recommend it enough, to be honest with you. And I think I'm so pleased we're talking about it now because it gives people a chance to get the book before they go away on their summer holidays, on their vacations. And they can be sure to have a good book on the plane or the boat. But maybe actually reading this if you're on a ship, you might think, crumbs, I hope there's a Newfoundland on board. No, I'm joking.
Well, that's quite humorous, but you know, also I hope and I believe that this was ingrained in me from my father, the poet, and also from journaling. You know, I've completed over 65 art journals where, you know, do sketches of nature, write my thoughts and what have you. But I found with journaling, to think and to look around me, to look into the early morning and what have you and the weather, and try to express it in a more poetic way. And so I hope that I've also written Cedric with a sense of verse.
I think so. I mean, I'm no book literary critic, you know, but I know it's really captured my imagination for this dog that no one really knew anything about, but Landseer wanted to paint him, use that model that he found in London, that the records are there. And this is what dogs would do, you know, Newfoundlands would rescue people from the sea. So I just think it's brilliant. And it's celebrating, yeah, an unsung hero. So Barry, I mean, it ticks all my boxes. And I think, you know, you sound so lovely. And I'd love to come and visit you one day on your farm.
Right. You're more than welcome. I think Sandra and I have this wonderful quality. We don't get bored and we are very productive and we kind of feel like we're living kind of like in a monastery here. But, you know, if you don't get bored and you love nature and what have you, I think it's the greatest place in the entire world.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, nature, it's great. And dogs help people understand nature. You know, if you walk your own dog, you do get out and about. And I think that's one of the greatest gifts dogs bring us. So as defined indeed with Cedric Footprints in the Sand, you know, and his story with Pinky and the legacy that he either did or didn't leave in a place in his life, because those people that knew him certainly would never have forgotten him, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and what are the names of the people he saved and the ships that went down too? All these question marks. And by the way, I put in this a vein of a young lady too, from, I call this the fictitious village of Sheppey, as I said, which is really an island in that same area, but I just used that as a village. But a young lady who goes to London during this time, the Victorian era, and she studies in a workshop to be a painter. And I think this is good because living like an artist, having that passion in me and that, that heart like Van Gogh and all the myriad of things that you go through and you think, hopefully I imparted this, and so readers will really have a fuller understanding of the life of an artist. So that's just part of what flows in these 100 chapters. And also there is a subtle vein of love too. It's soft and nothing crude, nothing coarse. And I'd like to say it's highly romantic.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. Well, I did smile because I thought, I bet, I did smile because, it's kind of all the rage that your dog will bring the wedding ring down the aisle and present the wedding ring at the right time. Lots of people have been doing this now. And then Loma and Cedric does this. I don't want to give anything away. And it did make me smile because I thought, so maybe that is a little bit, that maybe is fiction, I thought. But the rest of it, well, maybe not. Maybe not. There you go, you
That's
see.
less fiction than some other parts. I think that fits in like a royal glove.
Yes, exactly. Yes. But he did get a medal, didn't he, Cedric, from the British Humane Society?
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did. Yes, which he really deserved. Oh, well, I urge everyone to find out more and get this book. And we're going to put all the links, don't worry, Barry, into the show notes. But it's basically available on Amazon, isn't it? So very easy for everyone.
Yes, and I'd like to, as I mentioned, I'd like to close with just a part of this poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, who lived during the time of Queen Victoria. And I think it's an excellent way to complete. And departing, leave behind us footprints on the sands of time, footprints that perhaps another, sailing over life's solemn main, a forlorn and shipwrecked brother, seeing, shall take heart again.
Well, thank you, Barry. Thank you, Barry Stebbing, for joining us on A Dog's Life today. And I just urge everyone to read this book as it's fascinating and gripping. And you've got to turn those pages. Thank you, Barry.
Oh, thank you.
That's our show, Mr. Binks. What did you think? Yes, I know. Cedric, aka Bob, indeed was an unsung hero. And you're right, it is time for Woof of the Week. It's interesting how dogs in both art and literature have really helped define our lives and our humanity. Well, I hope you all enjoyed it. If you did, go on, rate and review the show wherever you tune into your podcasts, because it really makes a difference and we love your feedback. Thanks again, of course, to Barry Stebbing for joining us today. And all the links, of course, will be in the show notes. And thanks, of course, to Mike, my producer, for all the music and production as ever. Find out more about Mike at PodPeople UK. And if you want to find out a bit more about me, check out my website, annaweb.co.uk, or find me on Anna Webb Dogs. What's that, Mr. Binks? You're right. We will be back in your feed next Sunday. So if you haven't already subscribed, go on. It's free and it means you'll never miss another show. Bye for now.
People.